Okay. So today I think it's the 13th of March, 2018 Tuesday class. So we will commence our Vandana chanting. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Adinadana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Kamesu micacara viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Usawada viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, Surame raya majapamadatana viramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Now we will chant the padipa puja offering of light. Ganna sarapa ditena dipena tamadang sina diloka dipang sambudang pujayami tamonodang ganda sambara yutena dupena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bajana mutamang vanna ganda guno petang etang kusuma santati pujayami munindasa siri pada sarorohe pujemi budang kusumena nena punena matena chahotu mokhang pang milayati yata idang me kayo tata yati vinasabhavang adivasetu nobante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang adivasetu nobante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Now we will chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these various puja offerings. Significance of offering of light to the Buddha. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of water May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses of the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense, which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami of generosity and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flower. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate sila, samadhi, and panya, leading to ultimate liberation, non-free nibbana. Making our overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of sadha, virya, sati be further strengthened until they become balas or powers. Sharing and transfer merits to all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us be respectful, Jim. Bhutang Pujami Dhammang Pujami Sanghang Pujami. Okay, you all can be seated. We will have half an hour of meditation, huh? But today I'm going to teach you the other simplified way that can allow you to develop the silent mind straight away. Yeah? It's on page 55 of this yellow book, 46th lesson of the Six Patriarch Sutta. Huh? I did the sharing at Wuping Jingse. So this one, I think you all have collected it recently. Sorry, don't off this light. On this light. Otherwise, I cannot see. Okay. I will off it afterwards. Okay, you listen. Okay, earlier on, there was a question, so I explain all this, then only I follow up with the meditation. So I read to you the page before. Okay. All phenomena, may they be physical, mental, or nature's phenomena, they exhibit these three universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering state, and non-self, or empty nature. The moment you realize this, then you will start to understand that truth is everywhere, in the midst of life and nature. The universal characteristics of impermanence, suffering, and non-self, or empty nature characteristics are everywhere. This is the truth, the reality, which is everywhere in the midst of life and nature. Why can't you see? For those who see, the enlightened ones, they always see. That is the final awakening leading to liberation of mind from all bondage. When you have that type of wisdom after the awakening, it means your mindfulness is already very stable. So you must make a note of this, Then in the midst of life and nature, the characteristics of nature are everywhere, so clear, so vivid, and so beautiful. And that will allow you to further develop the contemplative wisdom until this understanding becomes very stable, then there is no more doubt. Your faith in the Buddha is unshakable. That's how you liberate your mind. When there is no more doubt, you would have at least cleared the first stage of sainthood, which means the first three fetters that bind living beings to the world are already severed. There are a total of 10 fetters. The first one is self-delusion. The second one is right and ritual. You won't believe in all this anymore because you have understood that there is no permanent unchanging entity within the form and mind that we can call this is me, this is I, and therefore all this can be mine. Then even if people were to tell you, after you die, you will become one and one, you will know that there is no such thing, because this is only a form of mind, hence not me and not real, means no reality. This form of mind is never me, because there is more. Sorry, this form of mind is never me, because there is no more self-delusion. You won't believe in rites and rituals anymore, and you will not be gullible. The third fetter is your faith in the Triple Gem, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. It will become unshakable, because by then the understanding is already so clear. Nature's laws, the existential law, and all of the universal order, the five Pancha Niyamas, will also become very clear to you. That's why you will have no more doubt, and your faith will become unshakable, and you will come to understand that the Triple Gem with the teaching of the Four Noble Truths is the secret of life. You will understand them. You will have no more doubt in His teaching. That is all about truth, the Four Noble Truths. These Four Noble Truths are universal truths, because the moment you understand them, you can become enlightened. It's like the secret of life. When you understand the secret of life, you know how to live life. And then you are no longer deluded or deceived by the form of mind, because you know this is not you, but only a chemically conditioned form of mind, or a vehicle and a tool for you to come to this existential world. Likewise, all other living beings are the same. For everything is dependent, originating, condition arising, and causal phenomena. All this will become very clear to you in the meditation. So when you meditate during formal meditation, don't contemplate. But when you come out of it, you can contemplate. Sometimes, like I said, if within that silent formal meditation, all of a sudden something happens, then you can decide to come out of it to reflect and contemplate on it or not. If that is the case, even while in the meditative state, you can also reflect and contemplate, provided you can do it mindfully. Then it is not a problem. But you have to be very clear about the conscious decision that you have made, and you can be mindful of what you are doing. If you decide to contemplate, then you are not meditating. Your reflection and contemplation to develop a deeper understanding of what has happened. But the things you want to contemplate must be from the Four Noble Truths, because contemplation is about the second turning of the first, second, third, or fourth Noble Truth. These are the cultivation processes, so don't worry. Because the questioner was not sure during meditation, can she contemplate? So I told her, it depends. But if you are new, you are not stable, you better don't do any contemplation. Right? In the formal meditation, just silence your mind. Then everything will be understood. Then the next paragraph is where the meditation instruction is. I want you to try this out so that in the retreat you will know how to do it. When you are in the formal meditation, just relax be silent and maintain awareness of body and mind. This one you must remember. So don't worry about your mental technique or whatever. So you straight away develop the ability to meditate this way. And this is the fastest. This one take you direct to the true mind. You don't need to go through the mundane mind, thinking mind, doing all those thought-based meditation. So I repeat, listen. When you are in a formal meditation, like our coming retreat or here, just relax and be silent to maintain awareness of body and mind. Formal meditation is to train the heedless thinking mind until it is very quiet to realize the silent mind, then to make it very stable. Then when you come out of it, all your movements, your mindfulness, your awareness is like magnified. The slightest movement is like magnified into a very big movement. Even the subtle breathing will become very clear to you again. When your mindfulness has become very stable and when it has become a part of you, it means your mind has entered sati. Your mind is already in sati. This stability of mindfulness denotes that your third spiritual faculty of sati has been stabilized and established. Means it has become balas. And when the mind is in sati, even when you come out of the former sitting or walking meditation, that mind is always aware, serene and quiet. And it has the ability to be aware of all movements and action within life or activity within life. It's all very clear. Then all this movement will be like magnified. Even when you sit, the subtle breathing and movements are like magnified. You are very calm, peaceful and very still because your paucity or tranquility of mind is already established and always there. As you come out of the meditation and go into life, you will come to realize that every moment of hearing you are in sati. Every contact, every moment of smell, taste, tactile consciousness, you are very mindful and always in sati. Then every moment of seeing, the mind also is in sati. That's why you can see things as they are, the specific phenomenal awareness and the spacious awareness without a center. It has become a part of your own nature because of that stability of mindfulness. When your mind is in sati, everything you do in life, you are aware. So don't worry. So you don't have to learn to be aware. You only need to train until it is very stable and until that stability has become a part of your nature, which means mindfulness has been developed and stabilized until your mind has entered sati. When your mind enters sati, technically you no longer need an object of meditation. You don't need to train the mind anymore because this mind is already trained. It's just like playing badminton or learning how to cook or running or swimming or any games that you are good at. If you have trained well, you are so skillful, you don't need to train anymore because it has already become a part of you. And you would know how to execute it. And it's always spontaneous without thought. It has become so graceful, so easy, just like the case of badminton. You will know how to return or retrieve the shot naturally. The only thing lacking is whether you have the stamina to do it or not. But with mindfulness, it doesn't need that much stamina. The moment you are silent without thought, you are already aware or mindful. And mindfulness, when developed continuously, will become power. It has the ability to develop wisdom and understanding. And mindfulness will develop a very strong mind state that is very different because this mind is just aware. It can insight into phenomena and understand many things. It can see things as they are. It can give rise to wisdom. But mindfulness by itself has nothing inside. It's just an awareness state that arises when the mundane mind doesn't stir or come out to disturb. When there is no intervention from the thought process. So all this, as you go through your cultivation, you will start to understand. But to understand until the stability where you can share and teach is not easy. It will take a while. So don't hurry. Initially, after you have connected and awakened, it's just like you still don't know anything. Then you may try to remember what you have understood. But don't do that. Don't try to remember anything. The moment you are awakened, the understanding is already there, connected to the form and mind. It won't disappear unless the form and mind die. When it is there, every time you encounter something, the understanding will manifest. It will know what to do. It's not knowledge anymore. It's not from memory anymore. It's just understanding by itself. Then I say, okay, sadhu to you, huh, for arising such good condition for us and for me to share all this rather beautiful teaching with all Kayanamitas. That's all. So with this, I think you will know how to meditate. You just relax and silent. Don't do anything and maintain awareness. Thought arise, mental hindrance arise, let it be. When you don't resist, when you don't stir your mind, there is no mental hindrance. Then your silence, which is sati, will take over. When sati take over, your silent mind will arise. So just relax. Whatever arise, let it arise. Sooner or later, it will return to its mind's original state, which is stillness, tranquility, silent, and just aware. That is how you train your mind to have this ability to detect your true mind, the silent mind. And you have to stabilize this. That's why formal meditation is the best way to do. In a formal meditation, you cannot be heedful. You don't stand a chance when you go out into the daily life. You have to be very skillful. Then after that, maintain that daily mindfulness until you can extend it out to life. Then only your meditation will really transform. Okay, with this I will off the light. Then you can have your half an hour meditation. For those who still want to meditate, you can continue. For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then turn to page 6. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine of the King of Sages, which is heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samantha Chiakawalesu Atra gacchantu devata Saddhammang muni rajasa Sunantu sakka mokkadang Dhammo savanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta Dhamma savanan kalo ayang badanta Namo atasa bhagavato arahato sama sabbuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Namo atasa bhagavato Arahato sama sambuddhasa Iti peso bhagava arahang sama sambuddho Dvija charana sampanno sugato lokavido Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati Satta deva manusanang buddho bhagavati Suakato bhagavata dhammo Sanditiko akaliko Ehi paseko opanaiko Pachyatang veditabhu vinohiti Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Ujupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Samichipatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho Yadidang chattari purisa yukkani Ta purisa pugala Esa bhagavato savaka sangho Ahuneyo, pahuneyo, dakeneyo, anjali karaniyo, anuttarang punyaketang lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pachapa, Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you all can be seated. So tonight, chapter 14. PG, you got prepared? Good. Come, you take the mic.
we wait for a while, huh? PG need to go for toilet break. So page 14, chapter 14, sorry. Chapter 14 is on page 233, yeah? Turn to page 233. This one is about the Buddha's parinibbana. Oh, this one is very long. And there's a sutta on this. They call it the Parinibbana Sutta. After that, chapter 15 on will be interesting. It's about his teaching. Yeah, PJ. Page 233.
Good evening, Bratio, Mr. Steele, and to all Kalamitas. Firstly, I would like to ask for forgiveness if I say anything wrong or worse, wrong pronunciation of the names. Okay. Today's subject, chapter 14, is about the Buddha's parinibbana. From what I understand, it is meaning complete nibbana, which occurs upon the death of the body of someone who has attained nirvana during his or her lifetime. Okay, we start off with I think it's a poem for the Buddha. The sun shines by day, the moon is radiant by night. Armored shine the warrior king, meditating the Brahmana shines. But all day and night the Buddha shines in glory. The Buddha is an extraordinary being. Nevertheless, he was mortal, subject to disease and decay, as are all beings. He was conscious that he will pass away in his 80th year. Modest as he was, he decided to breathe his last, not in the renowned cities of Savatthi or Rajagaha, where his activities were centered, but in a distant and insignificant hamlet like Kushinara. From my reference to another book, it is called The Life of the Buddha by Bhikkhu Nanamoli. It is said that Kushinara was previously a great city by the name of Kusavati. It was once a king called Sudarsana the Great, and he was a righteous, lawful, universal monarch, and that was his capital city. Okay, then we go on with the subject. In his own words, the Buddha was in his 80th year like a worn-out cart. Though old in age, yet being strong in will, he preferred to traverse the long and tardy road on foot, accompanied by his favorite disciple, Venerable Ananda. It may be mentioned that Venerable Sariputta and Moggallana, that is his two chief disciples, predeceased him. So did Venerable Rahula and Yosadhara, that is his son and his wife. Rajagaha, the capital of Magadha, was the starting point of his last journey. Before his impending departure from Rajagaha, King Ajatasattu, the parasite contemplating an unwarranted attack on the prosperous Vajrayana. I think you can see that Magadha is a very big, occupies a very big area, and the Vajrayana is slightly higher up across the river. So this king, he decided to send his minister, that is the Brahmana Vasakara, to the Buddha to know the Buddha's view about his wicked project. Okay, from the Buddha declared the seven conditions of welfare, that as long as the Vajrayans meet frequently and hold many meetings, number two, as long as they meet together in unity, rise in unity, and perform their duties in unity. Number three, as long as they enact nothing not enacted. Abrogate. Abrogate means to do away nothing that has already been enacted. Act in accordance with the already established ancient Vajrayana principles. Number four, as long as they support, respect, venerate, and honor the Vajrayana's elders, and pay regard to their worthy speech. Number five, as long as no women or girls of their families were detained by force or adoption. Number six, as long as they support, respect, venerate, honor all objects of worship, and do not neglect those righteous ceremonies held before. Number seven, as long as the rightful protection, defense, and support for the arahants shall be provided by the Vajrayans, so that the arahants who have not come may enter the realm, and those who have entered the realm may live in peace. So long may the Vajrayans be expected not to decline, but to prosper. Hearing these seven conditions of welfare, which the Buddha himself have taught the Vajrayans, the Prime Minister Vasakara took leave of the Buddha, fully convinced that the Vajrayans could not be overcome by the King of Magadha in battle without diplomacy or breaking up of the alliance. Because of this incident, the Buddha thereupon availed himself of this opportunity to teach the seven similar conditions of welfare mainly for the benefit of his disciples. He summoned all the bhikkhus in Rajagaha and said, "So long, O bhikkhus, as the bhikkhus assemble frequently and hold frequent meetings, as long as the bhikkhus meet together in unity, rise in unity, and perform the duties of the Sangha in unity, as long as the bhikkhus shall promulgate," meaning to proclaim or make known, "nothing that has been promulgated, abrogate, that means to do away, not what has been promulgated, and act in accordance with the already prescribed rules. As long as the bhikkhus support, respect, venerate, and honor those long ordained terras of experience, the fathers and the leaders of the order, and respect their worthy speech. As long as the bhikkhus fall not under the influence on unreasoned attachment that leads to repeated birth. As long as the bhikkhus shall delight in forest retreats. As long as the bhikkhus develop mindfulness within themselves, so that disciplined celibates who have not come yet may do so, and those who are already present may live in peace. So long may the bhikkhus be expected not to decline, but to prosper. So long as these seven conditions of welfare shall continue to exist amongst the bhikkhus, so long as the bhikkhus are well instructed in these conditions, so long may they be expected not to decline, but to prosper." For this subject itself, I find that this book has been is quite summarized. So it's a bit difficult to further summarize it, because every incident that is stated in this book actually has quite a significance. So just bear with me, okay? "With boundless compassion, the Buddha enlightened the bhikkhus on seven other occasions of welfare as follows. As long as the bhikkhus shall not be fond of or delight in or engage in business, gossiping, sleeping, society, fall under the influence of base desires, shall not have evil friends or associates, not stopping at mere lesser special acquisition without attaining arahantship. Furthermore, the Buddha added that so long as the bhikkhus shall be devout, modest, conscientious, full of learning, persistently energetic, constantly mindful and full of wisdom, so long may the bhikkhus be expected not to decline, but to prosper. Enlightening the bhikkhus with several other discourses, the Buddha, accompanied by the Venerable Ananda, left Rajagaha and went to Ambalatika and hence to Nalanda, where he stayed at the Pavarika mango grove. On this occasion, Venerable Sariputta approached the Buddha. I think that time Sariputta was staying in Nalanda and extolled the wisdom of the Buddha, saying, "Lord, so pleased am I with the Exalted One that methinks that never was, nor will there be, nor were there now any other ascetics or Brahman who is greater and wiser than the Buddha as regards to self-enlightenment." The Buddha who did not approve of such an encomium. Encomium means a speech or a piece of writing that praises somebody highly from a disciple of his, reminded Venerable Sariputta that he had burst into such a song of ecstasy without fully appreciating the merits of the Buddhas of the past and of the future. Venerable Sariputta acknowledged that he had no intimate knowledge of all the supremely enlightened ones, but maintained that he was acquainted with the Dharma lineage, the process through which all attain supreme Buddhahood. That is by overcoming the five mental hindrances, mainly sensual desire, ill wills, love and torpor, restlessness or brooding, indecision or doubt, by weakening the strong passions of the heart through wisdom, by thoroughly establishing the mind in the four kinds of mindfulness, and by rightly developing the seven factors of enlightenment. The next place he visited, from Nalanda, the Buddha proceeded to Patalikama, where Sunida and Vasakara, the chief ministers of Magadha, were building a fortress to repel the powerful Vajans. Here the Buddha resided in an empty house, perceiving with his supernormal vision thousands of deities haunting the different sites, predicted that Pataliputta would become the chief city inasmuch as it is the residence for Aryas, a trading center and a place for interchange of all kinds of wares, but will be subjected to the three dangers arising from fire, water and dissension. Hearing of the Buddha's arrival at Pataligama, the ministers invited the Buddha and his disciples for a meal at their house. After the meal was over, the Buddha exhorted them in these verses. "Wheresoever the prudent man shall take up his abode, let him support the brethren there, good man of self-control. Give the merits of his gift to the deities who haunt their spot. Revered, they will revere him. Honored, they will honor him again. Are gracious to him as a mother to her only son, and a man who has the grace of the gods. Good fortune he beholds. In honor of his visit to the city, they named the gate by which he left Gotama Gate, and they decided to name the ferry by which he crossed Gotama Ferry. But the Buddha crossed the overflowing Ganges by his psychic powers, while the people were busy making preparations to cross." From what I understand, somehow he could bring himself and his disciples across the river without having to cross by boat. Future states. From the banks of the Ganges, he went to Kotigama and hence to the village of Nadika, and stayed at the brick hall. Thereupon, Venerable Ananda approached the Buddha and respectfully questioned him about the future states of the several people who died in the village. The Buddha patiently revealed the destinies of the people concerned and taught how to acquire the mirror of truth, or called the mirror of the Dharma, so that an Arya, disciples endowed herewith, may predict for himself thus: destroyed for me is birth in the woeful state, animal realm, pita realm, sorrowful, evil, and low states. A stream winner am I, not subject to fall, assured of final enlightenment. Okay, here the Buddha explained what the mirror of the Buddha means. What, O Ananda, is the mirror of Dharma? Actually, this is the recollection of the Buddha that we always chant with the beginning itipeso. I'm sure all of us know this chanting. Herein, a noble disciple reposes perfect confidence in the Buddha, reflecting on his virtues thus. Thus indeed is the exalted one, a worthy one, a fully enlightened one, endowed with wisdom and conduct, and an accomplished one, knower of the worlds, an incomparable charioteer for the training of individuals, the teacher of gods and men, omniscient and holy. He reposes perfect confidence in the Dharma, reflecting on the characteristics of the Dharma thus. Well expounded is the Dharma by the Exalted One, to be self-realized, immediately effective, inviting investigation, leading onwards to Nibbana, to be understood by the wise, each for themselves. He reposes perfect confidence in the Sangha, reflecting on the virtues of the Sangha thus. Of good conduct is the order of the disciples of the Exalted One. Of upright conduct is the order of the disciples of the Exalted One. Of wise conduct is the order of the disciples of the Exalted One. These four pairs of persons constitute eight individuals. This order of the disciples of the Exalted One is worthy of gifts, hospitality, offerings of reverence, is an incomparable field of merits to the world. He becomes endowed with virtuous conduct, pleasing to the Aryas, unbroken, intact, unspotted, unblemished, free, praised by the wise, untarnished by desires, conductive to concentration. From Nadika, the Buddha went to the flourishing city of Vasali and stayed at the grove of Ambapali, the beautiful courtesan. Anticipating her visit, the Buddha, in order to safeguard his disciples, reminded them to be mindful and reflective and taught them of the way of mindfulness. The lady must be very beautiful. Ambapali, hearing of the Buddha's arrival at her mango grove, approached the Buddha and respectfully invited him and his disciples for a meal on the following day. The Buddha accepted her invitation in preference to the invitation of the Likavi nobles, which he received later. Although the Likavi nobles offered a large sum of money to obtain from her the opportunity of providing this meal to the Buddha, she politely declined this offer. As invited, the Buddha had his meal at Ambapali's residence. After the meal, Ambapali the courtesan, who was a potential Arahant, very generously offered her spacious mango grove to the Buddha and his disciples. It is stated that Ambapali entered the order and attained Arahantship later. As it was a rainy season, the Buddha advised his disciples to spend their retreat in and around Vasali, and he himself decided to stay the retreat, which was his last and 45th one, at Baluva, a village near Vasali. In this year, he had suffered from a severe sickness, and sharp pains came upon him, even unto death. With his iron will, mindfulness and reflective, the Buddha bore them without any complaint. The Buddha was now conscious that he would pass away soon, but he thought that it would not be proper to pass away without addressing his attendant disciples and give instructions to the order. So he decided to dissipate his sickness by his will and live by constantly experiencing the bliss of arhatship. Immediately after recovery, the Venerable Ananda approached the Buddha and, expressing his pleasure on his recovery, remarked that he took little comfort from the thought that the Buddha would not pass away without instruction about the order. The Buddha made a memorable and significant reply, which clearly reveals the unique attitude of the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. "What, O Ananda, does the order of the disciples expect of me? I've taught the Dhamma, making no distinction between esoteric and exoteric, meaning secret and public versions. In this respect of the truths, the Tathagata has no close fist of a teacher. It may occur to anyone that it is I who will lead the order of the bhikkhus, or the order of the bhikkhus is dependent on me, or it is he who should instruct any matter concerning the order. The Tathagata Ananda thinks not that it is he who should lead the order of the bhikkhus, or that the order of the is dependent upon him. Why then should he leave instructions in any matter concerning the order? I too, Ananda, is now decrepit, aged, old, advanced in years, and have reached my end. I'm in my 80th year, just as a worn-out cart is made to move with the aid of tongs. Even so, methinks the body of the Tathagata is moved with the aid of tongs." Whenever Ananda, the Tathagata leaves plunged in signless mental one-pointedness by the cessation of certain feelings and unmindfulness of all projects, then only is the body of the Tathagata at ease. Bratio, does that mean that he is suppressing his...
I will explain this first.
Okay.
So here, what the Buddha meant is, you can go into the cessation of form and mind. When you go into the cessation of form and mind, he will be experiencing that enlightenment state of Nibbana. Nibbana is unconditioned. During that time, it cut off everything. Not only feeling, even content or consciousness, pure consciousness itself also ceased. So it's only during that time he can be at peace. When the mind come out again, because the consciousness is trapped in the body, and the body is like a worn-out block guard, there's nothing much you can do. He got some very good physician, but he knew a lot of this is nature's law, also karmic. He has to go through, he has to experience, he has to endure, he has to. It doesn't mean that you're fully enlightened. After that, you will not have any mental suffering. But there is this, what they call mundane suffering in form. Means the consciousness that is trapped inside will give rise to that uncomfortable feeling. Do you understand? It's just like when my body gets sick. Take for example cough. Cough is the thing that I know very difficult for me to deal. Every time I have cough, it will take me a long time to recover. Not really long in the sense like normal people. Normally, if I rest one night, the next morning I will recover from whatever flu or sneezing or what. But when it comes to cough, like there's nothing I can do. There's a process. Well, it takes time to develop. When you reach that state where this virus thing is trying to come out, then I can feel my throat area, there is no way you can do anything because the itchy thing will be there. And it will trigger off you to cough. I can silent, but what for? Because if I silent for a while, it will not happen. But after that, what is going to happen? So I might say, let it come out. Then endure. Endure means this nature understand the body is a body. It will go through old age, decay, sickness, and finally the consciousness will depart. So this reality, you have to come to term to accept them so that you can understand. So that the Dhamma is there. When I say you have to endure means the consciousness trapped inside, you got no choice. That type of, let's say you got cough is maybe one of the phenomena. But for those who are not familiar with cough, I tell you, you can cough until your heart here a lot of ache or no. Then sometimes the cough is so strong, non-stop, it can cause the physical part to be affected. But the mind of that being that has awakened, the wisdom that is connected, will not suffer. It will know. You got no choice. Like I said, two ways. One, react, become miserable. Think about it, worry about it, become miserable. The other one is, wait, I finish this part first. The other thing is, if you endure, accept that reality without delusion, it's completely different. That's why sometimes I can have this very severe sneezing. You may think that I am having problem. It's not I have problem. The physical body has problem. So this one will come out. The mind is completely different. But for the Buddha's case, it's worse. Because if it's like a worn-out block card, means that's why he said got to be stabilized by tong. He said tong. Means support. You cannot move with a worn-out block card. But anytime, you will give way. Because it's worn out already, like the wheel, everything worn out already. Waiting for it to collapse and all those things. So this is the part where a lot of people don't understand. It doesn't mean that you are enlightened, your physical body will don't have problem. No, that one is element, go the way of nature, it's not you. It will still be subject to decay, old age, sickness, and finally die. And what is important is, there are certain things you can invoke power of merits to recover. But there is a limit to a physical body and the form. You think the Buddha don't have parami? He has perfect parami. But there are certain limits that he can do. Yes? The reason why he's been subject to such harsh condition is he has too much compassion. Like chapter 13, you realize he hardly rests. He hardly sleeps. Throughout the day, his routine is like 24 hours. So sometimes he takes a nap for about 1 hour just to silence his mind. Then a lot of people don't understand this part. Because my nature went through when I was at the age of 35 plus. That time, I recover very fast. Then when this pure energy come, the Monday mind collapse, this physical form is very different. It's like a perfect human being. Then later on, for many years, every time I got a problem, I lie down, 10 minutes, I fully charge, I recover already. Then I can do my thing already. And then whenever I speak the Dhamma, my body got no problem. But then, this body, after so many years, with the pure energy, you know what is virus resistant, isn't it? You heard of virus resistance or not? When they give antibiotic to fight the virus, the virus that survive, although you recover, they will mutate to become a more powerful virus. So next time, the same antibiotic cannot heal it. So this body is the same. When you have this pure energy that make you so perfect, and later on, if even with this pure energy, the virus can still attack you, or can still give you trouble, then this pure energy doesn't serve you much anymore. Understand? So what I realized, at first was 10 minutes, I fully recovered. I charged her. Then later on, half an hour. Then later on, I need 2 hours. And now I need to sleep overnight, 6 to 8 hours, for me to fully recover. So this is the part a lot of people don't understand. But the physical body is not you, it's element. And it has its condition. That's why if you don't take care of karma, very severe thing can happen. Then for the Buddha's case, it's different. He has taken care of karma, but he has certain type of very powerful, very heavy type of karma that has to manifest. And he also too much compassion. To him, he just want to finish off the 45 years and then just have the sasana established, the dispensation established. That's why he worked very, very hard with great compassion, with great love, with great understanding. Then his routine was extraordinary. Not to say he doesn't know how to take care of himself, but his wisdom allow him to have that understanding. That's why he is willing to go all out and do it. It's like my teacher Ajahn Tradu. He at that time also, when I was following him around, I saw him hardly sleep. Early morning, wake up 3:45, chanting everything. Then after that, they have their pindapata. Then come back again, give dhamma blessing. Then have their meal. Then after that, again, people come and see him. Then again, in the afternoon, he got session until late at night. But after that, they have no more meal. Until midnight. The talk supposed to end at 9 p.m. Even when they are here. In Thailand, I think it's worse. So after that, the talk finished. One big group of devotees will stand by, approach him. Then wait for turn to talk to him and make offering. Yeah. Until midnight, still got people there. Then, because I sometimes have to be with him to take care of his need and whatever. Even though I don't call myself Kapya, but he know I always help there. He like me. He has his own Kapya. So all those things that the Kapya do, the Kapya will handle. But for me, I know his style. I know what he need, and sometimes too much offering, he will pass it to us, me and another Uncle Ku. So these are the things. So I very observant, I very mindful, then I will approach him, then he said, oh, okay, he will hand it over, then he said, pass it down. So because of that, I came to know his routine. After about 1 a.m., that time I think almost everybody is gone. He didn't sleep, He still go out, exercise. He like yoga exercise. He tap a lot of nature's energy. Then not until 3 a.m. he will not sleep. Then when he lie down, I think, at the most 1-2 hours after that, early morning, 3:45, they have their chanting if it's at his way place. So he hardly rest. So these are the people. Then that time, I told myself, I can't even last 3 days like him. Because I was just following, Then I also need sleep, I also cannot take it, He hardly rest. He can go on like that. That's why luckily, later on, I think blessing in this guy because he became too famous. Then certain comic thing happened. The Thai government did something. Then I think he went to U.S. and he has his, what they call, that asylum. What they call it? Asylum. Apply. No. Like they give you special permission to stay there. Asylum, I think. No, not that one. That one is a different word. This one is asking for the government to give you special permission. It's asylum, I think. Asylum. Asylum, A-S-Y-L-E-M, correct. So, you know what happened? After that, he don't have to go through all those things. He was around my age, or 1 year older than me. Otherwise, I tell you, he will have problem with his body. And he used to tell me in the car, you know, he said, Mr. Teo, do you know, if I want to get back my health and everything, I have to go into the forest where nobody see me for 3 months. Then I will fully recover and come out. He said, because hardly rest. And when I took him around, I bought a special van, you know, Toyota Light East, to fetch him and his disciple. You know. My wife also was with me. Then that time I remember, he came to Brickfield. Yeah, they invited him. Wow, the whole of Brickfield was packed. And it was such a quiet night, you know. No wind, nothing, you know. Then a bit humid. So they waited for him to come. So when I reached there, all the disciples get down. You know. Then he told me, he said, Tio, we go one round. Don't come down first. Let the disciple go in. So he asked me to drive him one round to the other side of the Brickfield side, at the far end. There is a circle. So I drove him there. Then he said, you wait for me. He was communicating with the devils up there. You know. I think he felt something. You know. Then after that, he came back to my Toyota like this, and he talked to me. He said, he told me what I told you just now. He said, for me to recover completely, I have to go into the forest again for 3 months, where nobody disturbed me and contact me. Then after that, he said, come, now we can go. And do you know what happened or not that night? Was song there? That night, a lot of people were in Brickfield, packed, full. So the moment I dropped him, I go and park. Then I came back. The first person he went and paid respect was Chief Reverend Kesri Namananda. Then I think Reverend Dariya were all there. Then they had their formality. Then he said he wants to go into the Shine Hall. Do you know what happened? The moment his feet about to step into the Shrine Hall, immediately when the leg step on it, that lightning, you know how loud was it? Like a lightning, very loud, strike, non-stop. Then the downpour, the rain, immediately, very heavy, suddenly, just came. So when the lightning strike before the water come, his leg was in. Then he walked 3 more steps, which is the shelter area, to go into the shrine. Immediately he entered the shelter area, the downpour come. Everybody was caught wet. Yeah. But I was lucky because I let them go in front. So I stay further back. So further back, the moment the lightning strike, the moment I saw, I rejoiced, then I went into the other Dhamma talk, Dhamma hall. The Shrine Hall is opposite the old building. Then the Dhamma hall is over this side. So I went in there. And after he paid his respect and all, by the time he wants to come out, the rain completely stopped. And it was so cooling that day. Yeah. A lot of these things, I tell you, you cannot understand. Yeah. Okay, now Han, your question. Long enough. Okay, you sit there.
Actually, the Buddha has psychic power. I was trying to say is he is able to detach the form and mind. Although he has to go through this old age sickness and death, but he is mentally not sick, but physically sick.
So, what is your question?
I'm just sharing
now. Okay. You see, you must not have this wrong idea. You don't think you got psychic and you can overcome your sickness, I tell you. No way. Forget about it. When you use energy, it will help you for a while. But when your body is weak, when your mind is no longer like that, the usual mind, like Devadatta, he lost his ability to perform psychic, and he became miserable. Without wisdom, you will become miserable. No matter what it is, how powerful your psychic is, you will succumb. Because psychic is an energy field. An energy field drain the human body tremendously. Then sometimes you overuse it, it backfire. Backfire in many ways. My last teacher told me, his father was a Raja Yoga expert. And you know what happened to the father? When he was 6 years old, he warned the father. He said, what you are doing is wrong. That type of meditation. So the father was very unhappy with what he said. He said, you small fellow, what do you understand? He said, I am the famous Raja Yoga practitioner. And I think at the age of 60 or 60 plus a bit, his brain vessel in the brain burst because of energy. A lot of people, if you build up your crown chakra, you use energy field to go and open up your third eye and all things, and you play with energy because you need a lot of energy. And when you're young, your brain is elastic, but as you age, it will happen. That is the risk. So a lot of people may not know, but these are people who has witnessed it happening to people whom they know. So if you want to play with energy, you better be careful. Otherwise, later on, too late. But the individual has a choice. The choice is yours to make, because it is nothing to do with others. A lot has to do with your past, your karmic conditioning and karmic inheritance. So this part, luckily we got condition that we can discuss about it. Otherwise, it's not easy. If you don't hear it from people who has the understanding or who has control, you only speculate, because you are only told the beautiful side of those special mind state where they can perform a lot of very special thing or psychic ability. Life is not about psychic. Well, that psychic doesn't carry you anywhere. Finally, you still succumb to sickness, disease, aging, and also finally death. Then if your mind don't have wisdom, no matter how powerful you are, you also finally have to end up the way of the healers. Means you will have mental suffering, especially towards old age time, when they lose their ability to have that ability to meditate until that type of energy field, to sustain that type of psychic ability. Then especially when they lose them, they become miserable. Then suddenly they realize, how come last time I can overcome all my problems? Now I can't. And they don't have the wisdom to understand. That's why behind the brain there, they accumulate that type of unhappiness. Then they start to doubt themselves. That's how a lot of these cultivators suffer. Even certain monks, they go through that process without understanding. They are also afflicted. So this is something that cultivator should understand, so that your focus is there. That's why under Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundation of mindfulness, under Kaya Nupassana, the Buddha did mention, you must cultivate Sati Sampajana. Means, not only Sati alone, you must have clear comprehension. Clear comprehension of non-delusion. Means, you are very clear about your purpose and intent. Means sincerity of purpose. You are not there to train your mind to have all this psychic and all those things. It will not lead to freedom. And you have to have this non-delusion. Means not to be trapped by the defilement of insight, then become complacent and all those things. Then clear comprehension of domain of meditation. then the most important people, the most important time, and the most important place. So these are the various types of clear comprehension that you need to develop to complete your training, your cultivation. Okay? You continue.
Okay, we are at page 244. Therefore, Ananda, be ye islands unto yourself. Be a refuge to yourself. Seek no external refuge. Leave the Dhamma as your island, the Dhamma as your refuge. Betake no external refuge. How, Ananda, does a bhikkhu live as an island unto himself? Here, Ananda, a bhikkhu live a strenuous, reflective, watchful, abandoning covetousness in this world, constantly developing mindfulness with respect to the body, feelings, consciousness, and Dhamma. That is the four foundation of mindfulness. Yeah? Whosoever shall live, either now or after my death, as an island unto oneself, as a refuge unto oneself, seeking no external refuge, with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge, seeking no external refuge, those bhikkhus shall be foremost among those who are intent on discipline. Okay, the next one is, here the Buddha lays special emphasis on the importance of individual striving for purification and deliverance from the ills of life. There is no efficacy in praying to others. Efficacy means the ability to produce an intended result. Yeah? There is no efficacy in praying to others or in depending on others. One might question why Buddhists should seek refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. When the Buddha had explicitly advised his followers not to seek refuge in others. In seeking refuge in the Triple Gems, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, Buddhists only regard the Buddha as an instructor who merely shows the path of deliverance. The Dhamma as the only way or means, the Sangha as living examples of the way of life to believe. By merely seeking refuge in them, Buddhists do not consider that they would gain the deliverance. Though old and feeble, the Buddha not only availed himself at every opportunity to instruct the bhikkhus in various ways, but always regularly went on his round for alms with bowl in hand when there is no private invitation. One day, as usual, he went in quest of alms in Vasali, and after his meal, went with the Venerable Ananda to Kapala Chatiya, and speaking of the delightfulness of Vasali and other shrines in the city, addressed the Venerable Ananda thus. Whosoever has cultivated, developed, mastered, made a basis of experience, practice, thoroughly acquired the four means of accomplishment, the Idipada, that will be the Chanda, Virya, Citta, and Vimamsa, could, if he so desire, live for an aeon, or even a bit more. The Tathagata, O Ananda, has cultivated, developed, mastered, made a basis of experience, practice thoroughly acquired the four means of accomplishment. If he so desires, the Tathagata could remain for an aeon, or even a bit more. The text adds that even though a suggestion was so evident and so clear, was thus given by the Exalted One, the Venerable Ananda was incapable of comprehending it, so as to invite the Buddha to remain for an aeon for the good benefit and happiness of the many, out of compassion for the world, for the good benefit and happiness of gods and men. Actually, this incident was later related back to Ananda that he did not use this opportunity by the Buddha when at the time when the Buddha was going to pass away, and he suddenly recollect about this incident, and he asked the Buddha to stay on, but the Buddha says the time has passed, so I find that this is very significant. The sutta attributes the reason to the fact that the mind of the Venerable Ananda was at the moment dominated by Mara, the evil one. I would like to share a little bit about this, about the Mara, because it was not stated in this book. According to the other book, after Ananda has left the site, the Mara, the evil one, came to the Buddha after he had declared this. And the Mara reminded the Buddha of his promise that he would attain his final Nibbana after he has, how to say, okay, I will read the whole thing so that you can understand perfectly. Yeah. Soon after he was gone, Mara, the evil one, came to the Blessed One and stand to one side. He said, "Let the Blessed One attain final Nibbana now. Let the sublime one attain final Nibbana now. Now is the time for the Blessed One to attain final Nibbana." Those words were once spoken by the Blessed One. "I will not attain final Nibbana, evil one, until the bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, laymen followers, lay women followers, my disciples, are wise, disciplined, perfectly confident, and learned, until they remember the Dharma properly, practice the way of the Dharma, practice the true way and walk in the Dharma, until after learning from their own teachers, they announce and teach and declare and establish and reveal and expound it and explain until they can reasonably refute the theories of others that arise and can teach the Dharma with all its marvel. But now, all that has been accomplished, let the Blessed One attain finally the Nibbana now." Those words were spoken by the Blessed One. So, when the when the evil one came to remind the Buddha about this, so when this was said, the Blessed One replied, "You may rest, evil one. Soon the perfect one's attainment of final Nibbana will take place. 3 months from now, the perfect one will attain final Nibbana." So sometimes when we say things, we have to be careful with what we say.
Yeah, the part is interesting, important too. So this is what the commentary described them, and Theravada teaching also described them. But I don't know whether what they interpret as for one eon. In the note, they say one eon means 100 years, but what we understand of eon is very long. So as far as the sutta goes, this is what was recorded. But from my understanding, maybe if Ananda has requested, he could have prolonged it a bit more. He could have prolonged it a bit. He could have used his understanding, invoke power, merits, and all those things. But the way I understand it is, this type of beings, to them, if you are serious, 45 years of sharing is long enough. Understand? No point. Then during that time, I think the Buddha knew there was no condition. Yeah, I was told about the story that PG read just now also. I think by reference, Suvanto. He was giving that type of sharing. So, in actual fact, the Mara did what they want to do. They keep on pestering the Buddha to go for parinibbana. Then for, I think, 2-3 times, the Buddha tell the Mara, he say, "Enough. Don't come and say all this anymore." And you know what they threaten the Buddha? He said, "When you are no more, we will don your robe," means become like monk, "and spread the other type of teaching, and change the whole thing until the true Dhamma is no more around." And they said all these things to the Buddha. But the Buddha just ignored them and say, "And now, foolish one," he say, "this is not the time to say all this." Then on the third time, if I'm not wrong, Raswana say, after he has decided that 90 days from now, he will have Parinibbana, and Parinibbana will take place. That's why in the sharing by PG just now, he replied to the Mara. He said, the decision has been made. Very soon, the Tathagata will go through his Parinibbana in 3 months' time, 90 days. So exactly 90 days, Parinibbana of the Buddha happened. So this is how I look at it. Even if he want to extend, he also will not do it for very long. Because to him, actually 45 years of sharing is long enough. You really serious. 2 years, 3 years, maybe maximum 7 years. You will progress very fast. Like he mentioned, the four foundations of mindfulness. What is the longest time for you to become enlightened? What is the longest time? No, shortest time is 7 days. I remember it's 7 years, isn't it? Not more than 7 years, isn't it? At least an anagami, isn't it? Something like that. So, not more than 7 years. So, you really seriously cultivate developing heedfulness and cultivate, you can become awakened very fast. This 7 years is for people who don't have the sasana. But people with the sasana, you don't need 7 years. Because when the sasana is around, the consciousness is different. The teaching is still relatively intact. And you're really serious about cultivation and life. All this can happen very fast. So this story of the Buddha's life history, if you understand, is quite interesting. Then I would like to take you all back to page 244. Page 244, where he told Ananda, he said, "Therefore, Ananda, be your island unto yourself. Be a refuge to yourself. Seek no external refuge. Live with the Dhamma as your island, the Dhamma as your refuge. Betake to no external refuge." So this meaning here is very, very deep, very powerful. I will explain it after that. Then he told Ananda, "How, Ananda, does a bhikkhu live as an island unto himself? As a refuge out to himself, seeking no external refuge, with the Dhamma as an island, with the Dhamma as a refuge, seek no other refuge." So here the meaning is very, very deep and very beautiful. First, the Buddha say, "Be your island out to yourself," means you don't go outside, understand? Stay within your form and mind. Then develop the silent mind to understand. Your truth is within you, not outside of you. So this part is very important. Be an island out to yourself. Be a refuge to yourself. Means seek within, don't seek outside. Your truth is within you, within your phantom length body. Then live with the Dhamma. Seek no external refuge. When you live with your Dhamma as your island and your Dhamma as your refuge, you will receive the understanding of the teaching that points towards the enlightenment. That's how that teaching, Four Noble Truths, the essence of the Buddha's teaching, is the most important. Then the other part that they explain about the Triple Gem, they miss out this. the essence of his teaching. Because the Dhamma is the one that the Buddha emphasized to Ananda. Huh? Live with the Dhamma as your island, the Dhamma as your refuge. Betake to no other external refuge. So this part, when you understand, because the Dhamma, which is the Four Noble Truths, can lead you to enlightenment. So when you take refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, the Triple Gem, the key emphasis is, within these three refuge, the Dhamma is also there. That's the reason why he said, under Dhammapada verse, there are three verses together. He said, there is no other refuge safe, apart from the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. Because it's only in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha where you can find the Four Noble Truths. Nowhere else. It's stated clearly in the Dhammapada verse. I forgot the number already. You all go and check. So, whether it's the Buddha or the Dhamma or the Sangha, the teaching or the Dhamma is there. Because the Buddha is a fully enlightened one, perfect in wisdom and virtue. He will have the Dhamma. So you take refuge in Sammasambuddha when there is condition for the Sammasambuddha to arise, then because you take refuge, you can have the affinity to connect. Then the Dhamma, of course, is the truth proclaimed by the Buddha. It will also lead you to enlightenment. Then the Sangha is enlightened. The enlightened order of disciples of the Buddha. So definitely they also have the Dhamma where they are enlightened beings. So this part you have to pay attention. Then we read the answer on page 244, last paragraph, when the Buddha asked Ananda, how Ananda does a bhikkhu live as an island out to himself, as a refuge out to himself, etc. Then the Buddha replied, here in Ananda, a bhikkhu lives strenuous means diligent, don't give up. Then, constantly reflective, means you contemplate, reflect and inquire. Watchful means mindful, aware. Then you have to learn to see the danger of covetousness. Covetousness is want to possess, want to own, want to take or steal. So abandoning covetousness in this world, then constantly developing the mindfulness with respect to the four foundations, kaya, vedana, citta, and dhamma. So these four foundations of mindfulness should be your refuge. You should stay within cultivating the four foundations of mindfulness. Because this is where the Four Noble Truths is. Within the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, you will have the complete Four Noble Truths. In fact, everything is there. Seven Factors of Enlightenment, Five Mental Hindrances, Five Spiritual Faculties, then the 18 Sense Doors, the mindfulness of the six internal sense bases, six external sense bases, and the 18 Sense Rhyme. All this you will come to understand. Then kaya nupasana is to anchor your mind so that it's in sati, it's not heedlessly lost in thought and all. So these are all very useful pointer that you should pay attention to. Otherwise, you cannot really progress. So you have to check how many of this quality do you have. Here in Ananda, a bhikkhu lives strenuous, means diligent. I think this one most of you have. Reflective. I don't think all have. But most people start to develop this. Contemplative, reflective, inquisitive. Watchful, also not that many. But nowadays, more and more people are watchful, means more attentive to life. More aware of what is happening to their thought process, their mental intention. Then abandoning covetousness is a training. You have to develop wisdom to straighten your view, to abandon desire covetousness, possessiveness, all of your wanting, desire, like and dislike, all this duality, pleasant and unpleasant sense experience, the duality that trap you. So if you don't have all this quality, means you understand that your training is not enough, and you may not progress so fast. Then the next one is the most important. Constantly developing what? Read from the book. Mindfulness. Have you done that? Only in the retreat you try to be mindful. In the midst of life, you are hardly mindful. So how can you develop the wisdom and the understanding? That's why constantly. That's why in Dhammapada verse 23, the Buddha says, the constantly meditative and ever mindful and steadfast one will realize the supreme enlightenment, Nibbana. So this part, constantly developing mindfulness, is very important. And your mindfulness, after you have developed it, you should apply it to cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. Means you have to anchor it to this four foundation to develop wisdom. And that is what his teaching is all about. So check against all this, then you cultivate with understanding, you will do it correctly, then you will progress very fast. Maybe after this retreat, many of you will become very different, I tell you. You will experience a lot of things. Then if you determine to carry this mind state back and to develop the ability to be aware in the midst of life, like what I read just now from the lesson 46. Lesson 46 just now was page 55. You go and read again. How when you train that mind until the mind enters sati, you can use any object of meditation also can. But if you don't want, you just relax, silent, maintain awareness. Then let the thought arise. Let whatever sankhara mind state arise. Then just let it be. It will come to cease. Finally, your mundane mind will cease. When your mundane mind cease, you will come to realize the true mind, which is just tranquility, stillness of mind, silent mind, no thought, nothing. And that is your meditative state. And when you stabilize that in a retreat, after that, your mind will enter sati. It becomes so sensitive. Whatever fine movement is like magnified, like I read to you all. Then, throughout the day, you are aware. Specific phenomenal awareness, spacious awareness without a center. All this will come to you. Then when you are in that state, you become very different. Then mindfulness is automatic. You no need to talk about mindfulness. It's in you. Everything you do is aware. Seeing with awareness, mindfulness. Hearing with mindfulness. Smell, taste, tactile. You can be there and then. Silent. Beautiful. Fully aware. Then it's just aware. Then no need to know. But when you come out to live life, you have to know. That's why you perceive. You understand. Then you move. You don't go and allow the thought to proliferate. Then if you want to reflect and contemplate on it to develop clearer understanding, stop somewhere. Don't while you walk, just like people who play with handphone, walk and hand and eye on the phone. I tell you, you get into big trouble. So when you want to reflect and contemplate, go to a quiet place. Or when you are back at home. Or go internet cafe. Buy a coffee. Then relax, silent, and reflect. Or go to a very quiet coffee house or what. I like to go to this type of quiet place during my early days. I like to stay alone. When I was studying, I like to go library, a very quiet place. Then I like to go to a place where nobody on. Then I choose to be alone. Then at night, I will look at the sky, reflect, contemplate. Then sometimes I see some benches somewhere. I will just sit there. And alone, I will reflect, contemplate. contemplate into life, into nature, into everything that I want to understand. So this is the part. I hope it can help you all. Okay. Almost 10:30 already, PG. So we continue after the retreat. So we stop at page 247. Page 247. Then we let PG continue after 2 weeks from now. Our class will be off for 2 weeks. Our coming retreat Thursday and the subsequent Thursday though. Yes. Repeat your question, because for the recording, Vivian. Thank you. What is your question again? Thank you.
When you mentioned about psychic earlier, like when we meditate, we are supposed to, I'm not sure if it's finally or what, to stay at the heart. Does that involve any energy?
Depend on how you understand it. You see, if you do according to what the Buddha has taught us, we only need to be aware, silent. Then there is no energy build up. Off that one first. You off it. There is no energy build up. But if people go and focus at the heart chakra, then that one is energy field. Focus. Focus means you send your thought in. Understand? Not? They call it opening chakra. Actually, that one is tempering. Energy go in. Because you put your thought there, understand? And thought is energy. So you put your thought there. Because when you are concentrated, you can stay there and focus the energy there. So a lot of people who wants to activate the chakra point, or what they call the major energy nerve center. Chakra stands for nerve center. Chakra are major nerve center. Human being, we got seven major chakras. They call it the, there's a crown chakra. I think the Hindu got a word for it. Sasahara, I don't know what, I forgot already. Then they got the third eye. Then they got the, I think the throat there. Then the heart, then the navel. Then even near to the sacral vertebra there. After the Tan Tian is the one, the sacral vertebra there. So they go and activate. they call it to awaken the Kundalini energy. The Hindu teaching a lot of that, but don't touch all those things. If you want to find out, try for health reason, it's okay, because you want to learn all this to improve your health, no harm. Can go and do Qigong, all those things. But when you want to develop wisdom, remember, forget about this. Because it doesn't mean that you have learned it to improve your health, then you cannot do the meditation. No. You must know how to release it out only. And so people who use this energy, they want to develop psychic ability, and sometimes is to strengthen their earthly energy. You know what is earthly energy? Because the Tan Tian area is earth energy. Earth energy is very powerful on earth, the psychic. That's why all the Kung Fu people, they actually develop the Tan Tian energy very strong. Then they can stay at the Tan Tian and let you hit, no? You have seen those Shaolin on a steel bar, also cannot bend. Then they try to perform a lot of this. Then some they can levitate and all those things. But this will not free your mind, because these are all energy field. I mean, you are curious, you want to touch it. I wish you luck. I got no comment. Yeah, this is not something I will teach. I will not teach people to do all these things. Personally, I don't touch. Because the moment you touch,
you will be affected somehow. You cannot develop the clear wisdom. It's like 人在江湖, 人在公湖, you have to survive, you have to learn the fighting skill, understand? Swordsmanship, they call it. So those who live by the sword, die by the sword, understand? So psychic is the same. People will come and challenge you. Especially those who develop the Dhamma in the wrong way, Adhamma, people will come and challenge you, understand? Argue with you, and try to challenge you and say a lot of this type of thing. So it become like another type of jianghu, religious jianghu. Jianghu in English is called, in English you call it, you just, gonghu. Jianghu, English. Never mind, we all understand enough. Yeah lah, yeah lah, what is the English equivalent for gong wu? Qiang Hu is not life, no. Life of the swordsmanship. Yeah, I think never mind, we leave that aside. So anyway, Vivian, I want to resolve your concern. Even if you done qigong, you keep at the Tan Tian, no problem, understand? Yeah, it will give you help and all those things. Then after that, when you want to learn the Dhamma, you only have to release this energy out so that you are back in your free mind state to cultivate daily mindfulness. Then with the mindfulness and the awareness, the wisdom will be developed. That's how. Yeah. No, initially, if you can go into that, I won't say focusing, because when you do mindfulness, like anapanasati, your mindfulness can be very, very continuous, very stable, continuous, until no gap, no. Then you know what happened, no? It will go into absorption, no? Especially those who do anapanasati. I was caught in it in the early day. I did my anapanasati until the continuous mindfulness was so strong, I can go into absorption, no? I was absorbed into this breath, no? And that energy is so still, no? Like no thought. No thought, nothing. Because it's not focusing. It's not one point of that. It's continuous mindfulness that went into absorption. It was absorbed into it. Then when I absorb into it, in the middle of the night, I meditate. Then I used to have this racing car or motorbike last time. That's why they put all the bump there, now no more. Last time, middle of the night, 2, 3 a.m. Suddenly I cross. Then when I like to meditate after 2. That's why when everybody is sleeping quiet. Then during that time when this vehicle passed by, very loud one, then I was in this absorption. All of a sudden when the absorption come in, the sound all cut off. Completely. The hearing consciousness cannot come in at all. Your mind secluded inside. That is called seclusion of mind. Chitta vivika. The mind secluded inside. Cut off all the sense experience. And you can stay within. Abide within, citta vivika. But that one is a conditioned state, still not a free mind. That's why I came to know it's still not the thing. Then later on, I release it out. Then you have to develop wisdom, become upadhi vivika. No matter where you are, under whatever condition, you are still at peace. Means in the midst of life, in the dynamic state. You are still at peace. Your equanimity, your wisdom is born of wisdom. Oh, sorry, your equanimity is born of wisdom. So that one is the real wisdom that free you. Otherwise, you can still be trapped. And luckily, I tested it. At first, I thought, cannot be. The sound is still there. Then the moment I release it, I release and come out of it, boom, the sound is still there. Well, there are a few bites. So because of that, I came to know. Then when I report this to Achan Ganha, Achan Ganha understand. No? He said, Satu, he said, very good, very good. Said, well, the disciple was trying to translate. Well, he only know Thai, he doesn't know English. Then he said, yeah, yeah. He said, this is the one that can happen. He said, so he said, well, that time I was very young. That time I was a few years after the uni, I came out. Then I told you all, I was so still and so calm. Well, this anapanasati was throughout the day with me, you know. I can carry that state around. Then there is so much piti and sukha, joy. Then my heart here, like a cylinder of energy, locked inside there. You know. Like a still, very still mind here. You know. Then nothing can stir it. Lightning strike also, peripheral, only like nothing. Then it can know at that time, you pour hot water on me or do anything to me, nothing will happen. It just peaceful inside there. Yeah? It's abiding within. During that time, I tell you, you cannot understand all this. That's the reason why at first I thought, oh, that must be it. You see? Then later on, I came out to work. That time, I was in the uni. Then later, I came out to work. When I touched money, then I didn't do that type of meditation for quite a while already. And I realized the greed come back. You know? Oh, I want to become a lawyer. I want to be a successful engineer and all those funny things. You know? Oh. Then this mind start. Then I realized, what is going on? Last time, don't have all this thought anymore. Only metta. The metta was very strong. Then suddenly, all these things come back. Then I realized what the Buddha's analogy was. The clear water, when all the dust particles settle down, then you see the clear water. But they are still down there, you know, the anusaya, not rooted out. No. That's why when the condition comes, it's stirred, it will come out. But it's not rooted out. That's why when I met Achayantra, I straight away knew what was it. Then I changed over. I released it out. Yeah. Then I did the four foundation of mindfulness. And within 2 weeks, it comes. Then everything happened. Okay, we better end. Oh, sorry. Taken extra 10 minutes of your time. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. We should thank PG also. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then I would like to dedicate all these merits. First of all, to NTO, Wu Pingqing Sir. She is going for heart surgery. Valve, change of valve of the node at IHU Medical Center. She is one of our Kayanamita. This is an old problem. She had this problem when she was quite young. Then later on, she survived quite long, but recently, complication came back, so she need to do that operation. Okay, let us recall to mind. All of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the past 2 hours of meditation, sharing, puja, rejoicing, and also renewal of our precepts, straightening of our views. Then later on, we will share merit, transfer merit. Then we also have partake in the meditation and develop a lot of wholesomeness. So let us dedicate all these merits for the well-being of all beings, starting with NTO. May these merits arise as the causes and conditions for Sister N to have a successful and safe surgery on this 15th of March, 2018. 15, this Thursday, we are 16 this Saturday, So I was told 16 is Friday, but 15 is Thursday. That's why the time I was told is 11 a.m. So after you all go back, you all remember Thursday, 11 o'clock. Before that, send metta to her and wish her well-being and happiness. And may the blessing of the Triple Gem be with her always. And may all this merit give rise to causes and conditions for her to recover beautifully after having the safe and safe and well completed surgery. Then now we will also share this merits with all the other beings, starting with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyang tang anamoditwa chirang rakhantu loka sasana itta vata chamehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anamodantu sabba sampati siddhiya idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo idang me nyatinang hotu sukhita hontu nyateyo imina punyang kamena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yawa nivana patiya sadu sadu sadu. Okay, you all can pay respect mindfully to Lord Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva and all the worthy ones. Then we end. Thank you.